The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
And they showed me an x-ray. He said a 22 caliber bullet will lodge in the lung, and we can probably get it out, may be able to get it and save the life. A 9 millimeter bullet blows the lung out of the body. So the idea of these high caliber weapons is of, there is simply no rational basis for it in terms of about self-protection, hunting. I remember, the Constitution, the Second Amendment, was never absolute.
That's the fake president going on and on about now he's aiming for handguns. And of course, you can even see a security agent behind him. He's surrounded by guys that have rifles and handguns, 9 millimeters, no doubt, to protect the president of the United States. And for good reason. He should have protection. But that's the thing. All of these elites, they live in their gated communities. They have their security guards. They probably own guns themselves, most of them. But they want to take away your guns. They want to take away the guns of the individuals that don't have private security, that don't live in gated communities. It's a power grab. And for his part, you've got the Canadian PM now, Justin Trudeau. Ever the opportunist. He's riding the wave coming out from Uvalde that we've got to go after guns, period. The guns are the bad guys. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to our live audio stream through CRN, Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3 on that platform. They play the program throughout the day, but they also bring you the live stream every day, as does our website, our very own trumpet.com. Go to thetrumpet.com, and this is where you can get to the live video stream. So you can see our beautiful set. You can see all of the clips. You can see yours truly. You can see me or you can listen to me depending upon how you want to follow the Trumpet Daily. Of course, all of our programs are posted after the fact as well at thetrumpet.com/live. So you look at those comments yesterday from Joe Biden. I mean, on the one hand, most gun deaths, most firearm deaths come as a result of handguns. Maybe he'll follow this by addressing the crime, the violence, the shooting, the murder in Chicago and other places like Chicago, Baltimore, happening every week. I saw a headline this morning. Every weekend, there's like another Uvalde in Chicago. It just happens through several different cases. It's not one mass shooter, but it's the same thing. But he knows, the Joe Obama people know. They know what the Second Amendment says. They know what the founders were thinking when they established it. And they're dishonest because they just want to do away with not just the Second Amendment, as my father has been writing about. Really, you can go back. We have some quotes here in just a moment. But you can go back to 2008 as he's been right on top of this attack on the U.S. Constitution. If the Second Amendment was never meant to be absolute, well, what does that say about all the other amendments? What does it say about the Constitution itself? These words that you heard there in that opening clip are meant to be provocative. They are meant to be divisive. Barack Obama knows how divisive this is, this subject. But still, he wants to go after the guns. It's the same way they react to the so-called white supremacy menace, the January 6th insurrection hoax, and on and on. Those that don't get vaccinated, they're killers. Tucker Carlson, he's a murderer. He's the one that caused the Buffalo shooting. Now it's Republicans. Republicans are responsible for Uvalde. They want to divide and conquer. This is Satan's strategy. This is the way Satan operates. Satan knows a house divided can't stand. Now, these people are so deluded in their thinking that they think when the collapse happens that they can then rebuild this socialist utopia. And we've seen that kind of experiment fail time and time and time again. They want the revolution. They want to grab the guns because they want total power. And of course, this is why the founders enshrined the amendment, the Second Amendment, the way that they did, because they knew a little something about government tyranny. And they knew that the ordinary citizens of the Republic needed firearms, weapons, in order to protect them from a police state, from a tyranny. As I said, with respect to the Prime Minister in Canada, listen to his statement from yesterday, clip three.
We're introducing legislation to implement a national freeze on handgun ownership. What this means is that it will no longer be possible to buy, sell, transfer, or import handguns anywhere in Canada. In other words, we're capping the market for handguns. These are actions that doctors, experts, and chiefs of police have been calling for years, and we're acting on their advice.
Wow, even doctors have called for this. Maybe Fauci's on board with it, you think? I think he is. Let's go after the guns. Say the doctors? Really? So here's another case where the experts, certain experts, of course, the ones that agree with us, we're going to tell you about what the experts say, what the experts think. Canada, by the way, they're the one nation in the world that's still putting some kind of a ban on domestic travel because of COVID. What a curse. What a curse this administration has been to the Canadian people. Still, people having to fly through hoops just to get around the country, just to get through the border to the United States. There's still travel bans for non-Americans coming into the United States. I mean, it's here in the United States too. It's not so much domestically, but there's a lot of people that need to get into the United States, but that can't because of COVID. If we have time, we'll get to more of that later. But back to the guns and the root causes of crime. Crime like what happens every weekend in Chicago. Isaiah 59 and verse 6 says, "Their works are works of iniquity, and the act of violence is in their hands. Their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed innocent blood. Their thoughts are thoughts of sin or iniquity. Wasting and destruction are in their paths." I mean, this was the nature of man even before handguns were ever invented. This has been man's nature from the beginning. And yes, weapons are becoming more and more powerful. What about nuclear weapons? What? All it takes is one madman to punch a little button, and we're off into nuclear warfare that would destroy tens of thousands of lives, hundreds of thousands, millions even. You read what Jesus says in Matthew 24, 21, and 22. Great tribulation is coming. And here are these radical ideologues thinking that if we can just get rid of a 9mm gun or maybe the AR-15 rifle, everything is solved, and we've got our peaceful utopia, as if the criminals are going to give up their weapons. In the Trumpet, this is the Trumpet brief from 2017, it followed the horrific shooting in Las Vegas, Nevada, that happened in October of that year. My father said following that shooting that the radical communists, they want to blame this tragedy on Congress and on poor gun control. And that's exactly what happened after Uvalde. They blamed it on Congress, not just Congress in general, Republicans, of course, Republicans. No gun control, my father wrote at the time, this is back in 2017, none of these responses will prevent more tragedies like this in the future. In fact, it's all a distraction that prevents us from dealing with the deeper sickness in our society. How about dealing with the deeper sickness described here in Isaiah 59? Verse 8 continues, "The way of peace they know not, and there's no judgment in their goings. They've made them crooked paths. Whosoever goes therein shall not know peace. It says, therefore is judgment far from us, neither does justice overtake us. We wait for light, but behold obscurity, for brightness, but we walk in darkness. We continue on, walking in darkness. In America Under Attack, my father has this lengthy section on the reason for the Second Amendment. And you don't hear this enough today. That's why we have to keep repeating it. He says, nearly every time a mass shooting happens, there's a dysfunctional family in the background. Something is wrong with our families. You don't even hear this anymore. Just a little bit last week from a couple commentators at Fox News. Outside of that, you don't even hear it. All these Republicans are lining up to surrender to Democrats, to please Democrats. Adam Kinzinger, he's outgoing because he wouldn't get voted back in anyway. But he's out there saying, yeah, AR-15s, we need to ban them. We need to ban the rifles. It says here, yet what is the solution? According to the politicians and the media, it's ban the guns. The radical left wants to take away people's guns, at least the guns of law-abiding people. The criminals are not about to give up their guns. Now listen to this. This is from my father's article, or rather the booklet, America Under Attack. We've got that here somewhere. The updated version is well on its way. It's off to the printer this week, by the way. So hopefully in the next few weeks we'll have some good news to report to you. You can get the new and updated and largely expanded version of America Under Attack. But listen to what my father said. This is back in 2013. He said, the Second Amendment in the U.S. protects the people's right to bear arms. But for what? For what? If you listen to the left, you would never know. To hear them talk about it, its purpose is so Americans can go out and shoot deer. Like, as if that's what the founders wanted. We've got to make the rifles and the handguns available so you can shoot a deer or maybe a wild pig. It says here, that isn't the reason for the Second Amendment at all. The main point was to protect the citizens from government tyranny. That's why the founders established this amendment, to protect the citizens from government tyranny. And as my father says in America Under Attack, why won't these radicals bring this up? Why won't they tell you the truth? They know the truth. They know the truth. They know history. They know that government tyranny is pretty much routine in human history. But this is what they want, so long as they're in control. If they lose a little bit of power, you see what kind of hysterical fit they throw during the Donald Trump years. Look at the way they behaved in 2016 to 2020. Look at the way they talked about election integrity in 2016, as opposed to 2020, when that rolls around. It says here, I wonder how many Americans even know that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. It is similar to how the Ten Commandments is the supreme law of God's church and the foundation of the entire Bible. It works beautifully if you just apply it. See, it works. God, the supreme law works. And that's really what you need to step back. Get the focus off an AR-15 rifle for a moment and think about the supreme law of the land. This is what the devil is attacking. This is what the communist left is attacking. In this America Under Attack, the first version came out during the Obama years. And my father writes about all the executive actions that Obama was taking to curtail, basically, the access to guns or the ability to get guns. He says here, my father does, the president, speaking of Obama, is so eager to restrict guns, but what is he doing to stop drug cartels making inroads into America? What about stopping the drug wars between gangs in America's cities? What success has he had in stopping Chicago, his hometown, from becoming the murder capital of the world? What about that? How about if you go after the guns that the bad guys are using? My father says, I'm sickened by what Adam Lanza did. He's writing this several years ago. But what makes me sicker is somebody using the massacre to promote a political ideology. And that's what we see happening again. This is what happens every time. And this time around, I mean, the radical left, they've got some momentum here because a lot of rhino Republicans are caving. It's amazing, as I said, I think earlier this week or maybe yesterday, Donald Trump, he goes to that NRA convention on Friday. all these other fraidy cats are bowing out, and yet here comes Donald Trump. I'll go. Yeah, I agreed to go, and it's in the Second Amendment. We don't have to apologize for this. Where are there more Republicans like that that will just stand up for the law of the land? Go after the criminal. Go after the criminal with full force. But they don't want to do that. Like my father says in AUA, they want to go after the guns because they want to take them out of the hands of ordinary citizens, law-abiding citizens, for sure. It's an attack. It's an attack on the Constitution. This is from a reprint article, Communism in America Today. Again, tomorrow's news today. I'm just giving you our own literature here. It says here, the radical left wants to destroy the Constitution. Many even argue that it's not the supreme law of the land and that we should get rid of it. It says, this thinking is bringing America down. What will you have when the Constitution is destroyed? I mean, what do we have left when the Constitution is upended and set aside? Well, you've got and Antiochus, and lawlessness, and tyranny. It's exactly what my father has been saying all these years. He wrote another article. This goes way back to 2008. And he refers to this 2001 interview that Barack Obama had, where he's basically trashing the U.S. Constitution. He quotes Obama from 2001. Obama said, "It didn't break free from the essential constraints that were placed by the founding fathers in the Constitution." And this is Obama talking about those constitutional constraints as if they're a bad thing. We need to get rid of those constraints so that the government has more power, so that we can have more authority. That's what Obama's always called for. My father writes here, Mr. Obama was talking about how the constraints of the Constitution need to be removed. He was revealing where he believes the founding fathers erred in writing and defining legal the defining legal charter of the U.S. And then he quotes this author from National Review, Bill Whittle, who said about the Obama interview from 2001, the entire purpose of the Constitution was to limit government. That limitation of powers is what has unlocked in America the vast human potential available in any population. It says Barack Obama sees the limiting of government not as a linchpin, but rather as a fatal flaw. And so that's why they've got the Second Amendment right in the middle of their crosshairs, because they got to take that out in order to have total power to ensure that there's no resistance whatsoever from a disgruntled populace. It says here, the founding fathers created the Constitution to limit the government's power because they had lived under a tyrant who decided, according to his own whims, what was fair for the people and what wasn't. You know, see, this is largely the way that Trudeau is operating in Canada. He's deciding what's good for the people and what isn't. I've now decided there's not going to be any handguns and sold, traded, whatever. This is it. We're putting a cap on it as of today. I didn't have enough time to read into that, but did that come through Parliament? Or was this just his official decree, like so many of Biden's, like so many of Obama's before him? It says here, the Constitution gave them a certain protection from evil human nature. The founders based this charter on certain biblical principles, not just human reasoning. Got to go back to the founders and the intent that was there from the very beginning. That's what we're getting away from as a country. One last piece. This is America's Real Enemy from 2016. That previous one was 2008. Tomorrow's news today, as we so often say. If you haven't subscribed to the Trumpet magazine, make sure you call our operators today and request your free subscription. There's no cost, no obligation. You get a one-year subscription to the Trumpet magazine so that you can understand your world. The phone number is 1-866-930-3024. Operators are standing by. One last quote. This is from America's Real Enemy. This is August 2016 in the Trumpet. There's a reason the Constitution focuses on what the government can't do to you. It aims to restrain despotism and to preserve freedom. That is its great strength, not its fundamental flaw. You see, the radical left, they see that as its fundamental flaw. In fact, it's the great strength. This is why people are still streaming into the United States of America. By the millions. They're not trying to get into Central African countries or South American countries. And if you listen to these Democrats, well, you would think as soon as they come into the United States at the South, they'd be gunned down in a second. No, they're still coming in. You got the big caravan moving north, even as we speak. And Joe Biden doing absolutely nothing about it, even as he tries to go about taking your guns in an unconstitutional gun grab. It says here, America's Constitution has given more freedom to more people than any other government charter in history. It's a noble document that has inspired and enabled so many to attain accomplishments that any other system anywhere else in the world would have denied them. So much freedom, so much opportunity. And of course, we're losing so many of these freedoms, these opportunities, because of sin. Root causes, Isaiah 59. He says here, do you realize how deadly dangerous this trend of lawlessness is? Very few people do, but it gives insight into the real nature of the threat facing America. My father says this is quickly moving America toward a race war and rule by dictatorship or tyranny. Look, we've already seen what they're willing to do to maintain their grip on power. They stole the 2020 election. And Donald Trump, for his part, really has, even though he's out of office temporarily, he's exposed the fraud. And he's had some help from Dinesh D'Souza and others. But listen again to what he said at his rally in Wyoming on Saturday night. I played this for you yesterday, clip one.
If we've learned one thing from Trump, it's that our elections are seriously flawed. I'm being very nice when I say that.
Seriously flawed. That's quite the understatement. This is from the Associated Press. Just this morning, it says here, Diane Murray struggled with her decision all the way up to election day. But when the time came, the 54-year-old Georgia Democrat cast a ballot in last week's Republican primary for Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger. I commented on this just briefly toward the end of last week. The results from that Republican primary, you know, where Brian Kemp, he beat Perdue and then Raffensperger got back in. These are ones that orchestrated the steal in Georgia. They're pawns, basically, that Stacey Abrams is moving around the chessboard. These two, how did they win so convincingly? Well, it was an open primary. The Democrats voted. And who do you think the Democrats voted for? They voted for Stacey Abrams' stooges. That's who they voted for. It says here, while state law allowed her to participate, this is a Democrat it's talking about, to participate in either party's primary, she said it felt like a violation of her core values to vote for a Republican. But it had to be done, she decided, to prevent Donald Trump, a Donald Trump-backed election denier, from becoming the battleground state's election chief. This is the Associated Press. I mean, a lot of them, as I've said before, they can't help themselves. They talk about the steal following 2020. Remember the big story in Time magazine? They just laid it all out. Yeah, here's how we pulled it off. We had to have the help of social media. You know, we needed the Zuckerbucks. And, of course, now Dinesh D'Souza has exposed all the mules. There's the problem with the machines. Yeah, that's right. CISA, CISA has even admitted that. If I have time, I'll get to that in a second. But here's this Democrat. She's voting for Raffensperger. Why? Listen to the AP. I feel strongly that our democracy is at risk and that people who are holding up the big lie, as we call it, and holding on to the former president are dangerous to democracy. They're dangerous, you see. Not the ones trying to do away with the Second Amendment. Oh, no. It's Donald Trump. Anyone but Trump. That's what you hear about the Uniparty. It really is. There's Trump and his supporters, and then there's all the rest, the Uniparty. And you could just as well call them the anyone but Trump party, the ABT party. That's what they are. Whether they're Republican or Democrat, Here's a Democrat coming out saying, hey, we better vote for Raffensperger in this primary because, you know, I'd rather have a Democrat win in November. But if a Republican wins, I want to make sure it's Raffensperger. I want to make sure it's Kemp. Certainly not Perdue, because he said the election was rigged. Get him out. We got to get him out. Listen to this. It says, Raffensperger, a conservative who refused to support the former president's direct calls to overturn the 2020 election, probably would not have won the May 24 primary without people like Murray. This Democrat, Raffensperger would not have gotten in there were it not for the Democrats. I told you on yesterday's program that Raffensperger and Kemp, they won all the urban areas. They won the big cities. Herschel Walker, he got the rural areas, didn't win in the cities. This Republican that won legitimately. But the machine, I mean the Democrat machine in Georgia, it is something to behold. It is well organized. Stacey Abrams is running that state. That's right. She's running for governor again this fall. We'll see what happens between her and Kemp. But even if Kemp wins, the Democrats are still managing to win. As long as it's anyone but Trump, hey, everything's okay. You know, the statistics, by the way, if you look at the Republican primary, remember coming out of 2020, you had the Georgia legislature put some laws in place to try to dial it back and to get some election security in place. And the Democrats were screaming, this is Jim Crow. This is racist. People aren't going to be able to vote. If you look at this Republican primary from last week for governor, Kemp took in 879,000 votes. Perdue brought in 260,000. So Kemp wins in a landslide. More than a million voted. If you look back at 2018, when Kemp ran the first time, he ran up against someone named Casey Eagle. I don't know if that's a guy or a gal. Anyway, the votes were 236,000, almost 237,000. Kemp got 155,000. It was the voting turnout was nowhere near what it was just last week. I mean, it's like twice as many people voted last week. For all of a sudden, the enthusiasm for Kemp is just sky high in Georgia. How could this be? Well, he's getting a lot of help from Democrats. Raffensperger certainly did. In 2018, the Republican, neither one of them, Eagle or Kemp, got 50% of the vote. So they went into a runoff, and they had to go against each other. Kemp won 408,000 votes. Eagle got 179,000 votes. So the total votes in the Republican primary in 2018 was 608,000, and then 588,000 in the runoff. So you compare that to this year, 1.1, almost 1.2 million votes. How do you explain this kind of a turnout? It's certainly not because Republicans got all these new voters. There were Republicans that voted, for sure. But they got a lot of help. And the Associated Press comes out just a week later and says, you know what? Raffensperger probably would not have won last week without the help of Democrats. The whole system, as Donald Trump has said over and again, it's rigged. The Democrat primary, by the way, well, Stacey Abrams didn't have anyone going against her. She's uncontested. So she gets through, no problem. And she tells all of her Democrat mules, hey, get out and vote. I mean, you could do it legally this time because of the law in Georgia. So if you Democrats get out and vote, make sure that we're going against Kemp and Raffensperger. And that's the way that it worked out. I just want to get you quickly through another what should be a bombshell report. The lead is buried a few paragraphs in, but this is from the Washington Post. It says the federal government has found no evidence, this is the lead, has found no evidence that flaws in Dominion voting machines have ever been exploited, including in the 2020 election. So CISA, this government agency, the Department of Homeland Security, they've determined that the election was perfect, but then continue reading in the article. This is unbelievable. This is the Washington Post. It says CISA has identified election officials in more than a dozen states that use the machines of several of several vulnerabilities and mitigation measures that would aid in detection or prevention of an attempt to exploit these vulnerabilities. It says further on, this move marks the first time CISA has run vote machine flaws through its vulnerability disclosure program. Further on, the Washington Post says, there are 9 flaws affecting versions of the machine called the Dominion Voting Systems Democracy Suite ImageCast X, according to a copy of an advisory prepared by CISA and obtained by the Washington Post. It says here, the ImageCast X allows voters to mark their candidate choices on a touchscreen and then produce a paper record, as was the case in Georgia. It can also be used as a paperless electronic voting machine. The flaws, many of which are highly technical and which mostly stem from machine design as opposed to coding errors, generally requires an attacker to have physical access to the devices or other equipment used to manage the election, says CISA. So they're talking about all of these flaws, these vulnerabilities, and then in the same article, in the same report, saying that 2020 was perfect. The New York Times had a big revelation back in 2018 where some guy, it was some local election in Michigan, I believe it was, he said, look, this is how the machines are vulnerable. We're going to go in here and steal this. And they did it just to prove that they could. And then there was this big video put out by the New York Times. As we've noted before, we've noted from 2020 on, all of these Democrats, all the way up to November 2020, saying, you got to get away from the machines. The machines are vulnerable. The machines are vulnerable to attack. And then as soon as 2020 happens, it's perfect. Everything worked. And here they come after the fact, and there's this report coming out, by the way, because of all of this litigation going on in Georgia. There's a report coming out from this same group that basically exposed it as vulnerable in 2018. I guess that's been under seal by a court in Georgia, but it's supposed to be released this next week, I believe it is. And so here's the Washington Post getting out in front of it, saying, look, we'll admit there's some vulnerabilities here. There's lots of flaws. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, flaw, but nobody exploited it. Isn't that perfect? There were no lawless actors in the 2020 election. All of this massive, the changing of the rules to speak of Georgia again. Stacey Abrams in the handshake deal with Raffensperger behind the scenes. All the mass mail-in ballots. The drop boxes put around all these cities in these Democrat areas in particular. They had the mules. They had the flawed machines. They had the midnight ballot dumps. They had cheating on a mass scale. And they're getting caught. And it's just one after another. The AP couldn't help itself but to admit, yeah, were it not for the way the rules are in Georgia, Raffensperger wouldn't have even been voted in. Why aren't Republicans in Georgia saying, look, we want a Republican primary. We're here to represent our base first and foremost. And yeah, we want to appeal to a larger audience, okay. But in a primary where it's just Republican against Republican, do we want these radical Democrats voting as well? Evidently, some of them do. Raffensperger certainly does. He wouldn't have won otherwise. You can't make this up. It's unbelievable. The fraud, the corruption, the gun grab. Do away with the Second Amendment. Now the 9mm. It's all an attack on the United States Constitution, the supreme law of the land. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to subscribe to our Trumpet magazine, Tomorrow's News Today, the 800 number, 1-866-930-3024. Feedback, we can receive your emails at td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Now, there's something else I wanted to say about Pentecost. I think if I'd keep talking here till 1 o'clock in the morning, some of you still wouldn't get it. Jesus called us sheep, and sometimes I think some of us are pretty dumb sheep. I wish we could understand it. And I'm trying to make it plain.
That's Herbert Armstrong from his Pentecost sermon in 1985. We've been fleshing that out here in the last several programs. Today will be our last installment, sadly, as we finish off with this point about how important it is for us to continue growing. Growth is paramount. And you see this lesson clearly brought out in the parable of the pounds over in Luke chapter 19. Let's notice this. Luke 19, starting in verse 11, and it says this, "And as they heard these things, he added and spoke a parable because he was near to Jerusalem, and because they thought that the kingdom of God should immediately appear. He said, therefore, a certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and to return." Of course, that's speaking of Christ. "And he called his 10 servants, his disciples, his students, and he delivered them 10 pounds, and he said unto them, occupy until I come." That word occupy means to busy yourself in trade and growth, development. You know, use this, in other words. Use these talents that I make available to you. Don't let them go to waste. Verse 14, "But his citizens hated him, and sent a message after him, saying, we will not have this man to reign over us. And it came to pass that when he was returned, having received the kingdom, then he commanded these servants to be called to him, to whom he had given the money, that he might know how much every man had gained by trading." He wanted to know how much they had gained. That word trading there in the Greek, you can look at this in Thayer's lexicon. It means to undertake a business for sake of gain. To undertake a business for the sake of gain. At Christ's return, you see, we're going to be called before the judgment seat, as I was saying yesterday, to see how much. He's going to want to know how much that we've gained, how much we've grown. Mr. Armstrong says, "This means each Christian is expected to grow spiritually, in spiritual knowledge and grace." That's in his conversion booklet. It's very similar to some of these sound bites we've been playing for you from 1985. This means each Christian is expected to grow spiritually. How much? How much does God expect? Well, look at the explanation that God, or rather Christ, gives in Matthew 5 regarding the spirit of the law, keeping the obvious spiritual intent. How that to observe the commandment that forbids murder, it also includes hatred. What's going on in our minds? I mean, the pursuit of perfection. If you think of Matthew 5 and verse 48, that's a verse, by the way, that just kind of encapsulates the true gospel that Jesus proclaimed. I mean, to be perfect, like God the Father in heaven is perfect, God and Christ the Son have never sinned. They've never They've never sinned. Jesus, when he walked this earth in the flesh, when he was tempted with wrong thoughts every time, he rejected them. He got rid of them. He put them out of his mind. He didn't dwell on them like we often do because we're weak, because we settle. We plateau and we think, well, we've grown enough, or maybe I'm a little strong over in this area, so surely God sees that and knows that these sins over here, if I don't deal with them, it's okay. There's sort of a balancing act going on. God says, no, put away, put the old man to death entirely. Read Romans 6. Maybe we can read a few extra scriptures in Colossians 3 as well. Romans 6, Galatians 2:20, crucify that old man. I mean, look at the language. The language that Paul uses in Romans 6, for example. I know I'm turning to Colossians. I'm throwing a lot of scriptures at you, but there's a lot in the Bible about this. In Romans 6, it talks about totally destroying that old man. I mean, the language that Paul uses, none of it is sort of this half-hearted, yeah, just give it your best effort. Try your hardest. If it doesn't quite work out, everything's okay. Now look, we make mistakes, we trip up, we fall down, but God wants us to get up and keep moving forward and concentrate on growing. This passage in Colossians, we often cite the first few verses where it says to set your mind on the things above. Verse 4 says, when Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall you also appear with him in glory. But notice what Paul says in verse 5. Mortify, therefore, your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and on it goes. You can read right through it. God says, mortify it. God says, kill it. God says, crucify it. God says, put it to death. That's hard to do. That's why we need a lifetime, a process. But there is a cutoff point. And Jesus Christ's return is imminent, and we want to be accelerating in our growth and development in the lead up to the return of Christ, for sure. Verse 16, it says, then came the first, saying, Lord, your pound has gained 10 pounds. And he said unto him, well, you good servant, because you have been faithful in a very little, have you authority over 10 cities? He gained 10 pounds. And the parable says that he's going to be ruling over 10 cities. How about that? Verse 20 continues, and another came, saying, Lord, behold, here is your pound, which I have kept laid up in a napkin, for I feared you, because you were an austere man. You take up, you lay not down, and reap that you did not sow. And he said to him, out of your own mouth will I judge you, you wicked servant. This is God's judgment. This is New Testament, by the way. Pay attention. You knew that I was an austere man, taking up that I laid not down and reaping that I did not sow. Wherefore then gave not you my money to the bank, that at my coming I might have required mine own usury? I mean, a little bit of interest would have been good. Anything to just show you wanted to grow these talents, these abilities. And he said unto them that stood by, take from him the pound and give it to him that has 10 pounds. You see, if we don't make gains, if we stop producing fruit, if we stop growing, then we end up losing the pound that we started off with in the first place. 1 Thessalonians 5 speaks of those who can quench the Spirit of God, that can actually lose the Spirit of God. I've listened to a few sermon audio files from ministers going back to the 1980s, Mr. Armstrong primarily, but on occasion I've listened to just a few others. I heard one from 1979. I forget the gentleman's name. I don't know if he's even still alive. But a powerful message, a powerful admonition to overcome and to grow, to produce. And I thought as I was listening to this message, where was that individual when Mr. Armstrong died? How come we didn't hear about him? How come he didn't stand up for the truth? What did he do when the great falling away happened? What did he do when all of those Laodicean ministers just compromised with the truth of God and started to bring in all of these false doctrines into the church? Doctrines that basically said, you know, you don't have to work so hard. You don't have to, you just try a little bit. But look, if you want to keep the Sabbath on Saturday or Sunday, just choose. Whatever's easiest for you. If you need to work at your job on the Sabbath, that's okay. This is the sort of thing that they introduced as soon as Herbert Armstrong died. Or if it wasn't right as he died, it was a few years after. It didn't take long. It's shocking. It's stunning that he dies in 1986 and Joe DeCotch Jr. comes out with his book in 1996, Transformed by Truth. He says it's truth. It was actually by demonic pagan doctrines. Satan the devil led that entire church astray. And the death in 86 and the book in 96, that's 10 years. The Church of God, under Mr. Armstrong, the worldwide Church of God, well over 100,000 people attending weekly services, millions and millions listening into the World Tomorrow program, reading the Trumpet, the Plain Truth magazine, 8 million circulation for the Plain Truth. And in just a few years after Mr. Armstrong dies, all of that's gone. All of those ministers, something like 700 full-time ministers, all of them, except just a few, a tiny, tiny, tiny few. My father, John Amos, a couple of others after that. But for the most part, none of the ministers in the Worldwide Church of God joined on with this work, the one you're watching right now, the one you read about at thetrumpet.com, or you get email alerts from, or on the weekend with the Key of David program. None of them joined this work, this God-given mission to raise the ruins of Herbert Armstrong's work and ministry. That's what we've been doing for well over 30 years. And this work, speaking of growth, it's been growing, even though our numbers, even though our membership hasn't been growing, you know, by tens of thousands of people. There's maybe 5,000 or so members around the world, quite a few more that support the work with, you know, their tithes and donations, donors, co-workers. But there's not nearly the number that Mr. Armstrong had back in the 1980s, the mid-1980s. And yet, look at this work from 1990 through to today, 32-plus years. You look at this campus, you look at the headquarters operation, you look at the book that we're rapidly working to get out so that we can have more public appearance campaigns. You look at the summer activities that we enjoy here at headquarters with the SEP program. We're about to kick off another Celtic Throne tour. Celtic Throne premieres next Monday here in Edmond. After that, we go to Denver, Rapid City, Amarillo. There's shows in Huntsville, Alabama, Nashville, Tulsa. You can go to CelticThrone.com to get a rundown on the shows that are going to be playing this summer. Lots of exciting developments. Always, there always is in God's work. Let's look at another parable in Luke. This is Luke chapter 12, verse 15. It says here, and he said to them, take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consists not in the abundance of the things which he possesses. And he spoke a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? And he said, this will I do. I'll pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all of my fruits and my goods. And I'll say to my soul, soul, you have much goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. Here's an individual in this parable who thought, well, I'm rich and increased with goods. All the heavy work is behind me. I can take it easy now. I can coast spiritually. It's no problem if I become complacent and rely on physical things. And think now about what it says regarding the Laodiceans. They're rich and increased with goods, physical things. They've given up their eternal inheritance for what, 5-10 years of good times in the flesh? Verse 19, it says, "And I'll say to my soul, soul, you have much goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, be merry." But God said to him, "You fool, this night your soul shall be required of you. Then whose shall those things be which you have provided? So is he that lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." See, God wants us to be rich, to be rich toward God. He wants us to have spiritual riches. Spiritual riches, in other words, to keep growing and accumulating spiritual wealth along the way. This is, I think my notes might be wrong, but I think Luke 21, verse 40, it says, "Be you therefore ready also." You can see on the screen, hopefully the guys get it right. I think this is Luke 21. It says, "For the Son of Man comes at an hour when you think not. Blessed is that servant," verse 43, "whom his Lord, whom when he comes shall find so doing." It says, "Of a truth, I say unto you, that he will make him ruler over all that he has." See, we've got to be found so doing. If we're doing, if we're preparing, if we're growing, then it's going to be God's good pleasure to just give us his kingdom. God wants to reward us. God wants to give us everything. God's the great creator of the vastness of the universe that we look up to into the heavens at night. He created all the stars and the planets and the moons and the solar systems. And he wants to give that to his family of beings. And when we're born finally into God's family, it's going to make everything that we experience in this life, well, just seem drab by comparison. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a wonderful blessing to live in the flesh, to receive of God's Spirit, to practice according to the laws of God. But there's verses in Isaiah that speak of us not even remembering the former things of old. Once we're finally brilliant spirit beings in the God family. Verse 45 says, "But and if that servant says in his heart, 'My Lord delays his coming,' and shall begin to beat the men servants and maidens and eat and drink and be drunken." See the individual that says, "Well, let's just kick it up. Let's like that guy in the parable. Let's just take it easy. Let's build a bigger barn. Look, we can stuff it full of all these goods, all these riches." Verse 46 says, "The Lord of that servant, when he comes in a day when he looks not for him, and at an hour when he is not aware, and will cut him in asunder," it says, "and will appoint him his portion with the unbelievers." That's what will happen, just like we read in the parable of the pounds. Verse 47, "And that servant, which knew his Lord's will and prepared not himself, neither did according to his will, shall be beaten with many stripes." It says, "But he that knew not," verse 48, "and did commit things worthy of stripes shall be beaten with few stripes. For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall much be required, and to whom men have committed much, of him they will ask the more." See, we've been given so much. God has blessed us with so much in the way of riches and abundance, so much spiritual wealth, and he has every right to expect a lot from us in return. God expects growth. God expects development. God says, you know, the overcomers are the ones that are going to rule with Jesus Christ, not the ones that just gave it a pretty good effort for a few weeks or maybe even a few years, but the ones who overcame their adversary, the devil, who put to death that old man, and who lived anew unto God, and who continued to grow, over the course of their conversion. Mystery of the Ages, we've plugged that over the course of these lectures on the subject of growth. Again, our operators are standing by, 1-866-930-3024. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is the Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to send us some feedback. You can email the show, td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.